Welcome into an hour of Ouch. It's a disability thing. I'm Simon Minty and I'm a man.
That's good to know. I'm Kate Monaghan and I'm a woman. The reason we're saying this is because it's International Women's Day on the 8th of March. And to celebrate that amazing day, we have three top-notch disabled females with great stories to share. But first up, Simon, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm not too bad. Hip is progressing as ever.
Excellent. I always enjoy the monthly hip update.
Hip update, yes. I can't think of something more witty than that.
Hip update.
How are you?
Fine. I had my blue badge stolen, though.
How? Where?
Well, I went on holiday to Cornwall, had a long conversation about whether or not we should drive to Gatwick and leave the car there or leave the car where we are. It was £40 cheaper to get on the train, so we decided to get on the train. And then outside the house, somebody smashed the window and stole my blue badge.
So you've no idea who did it?
No.
You have to report it to the police and done that?
Yeah, it was brand new as well.
I had mine stolen.
Such and a palaver to get a new one.
Oh, it's just hassle.
Such admin.
And 2 weeks without it.
Yeah.
I saw the person steal it, and my girlfriend at the time went to confront him.
You saw the person who stole my blue badge?
Blue badge. But it was a little bit scary. He kind of looked very vacant, and I thought, I think I'm going to let my blue badge go.
Yeah, probably for the best.
They're worth a lot of money on the black market.
Are they? Because I was trying to work out how would I find who stole it. Where do you look? Everyone says the black market. How do you find the black market?
You have to check every disabled parking bay in London.
Right.
That's where I'd start and then go to the UK. I don't know. It's got holograms. They're quite secure. What's the word? Conscious of security now.
Yeah.
So in theory, someone shouldn't use them, but...
I bet they do. I just wonder where the... do they go on Gumtree? Do they go on eBay?
No, I think the black market is... So it's just cash and people with word of mouth. I think that's the point. You don't advertise it. That's why it is just off. It's not... You don't pick it up in the second-hand charity shop.
Oh, okay.
Let's move on.
Anyway, now, do you remember the music that we had on our business podcast special last week? We had the whole Disability Works week.
Yes, we did.
Hashtag Disability Works. And we had a special business podcast presented by Johnny Cassidy. We had some music on there. Isn't it great?
Loving that.
Loving that track. Well, this, we have to do a big shout out to... my good friend, Ruben Reuter. He's 16 years old, he's got Down syndrome, and he made this on his iPad. So he thought, I want to do a jingle for Ouch, and he did. He's on the dumping ground, you can see, on CBBC. But yeah, in his spare time, also a little bit of a music producer.
Let's introduce the guests. Natasha Lippman is with us in the studio. You are a chronic illness blogger. That's quite a big title. What does it mean?
I write about the realities of my life with chronic illness. So I have a blog where I write longer pieces, but I've been a bit lazy. So I write a few times a week on Instagram about topics related to having an invisible illness in your 20s.
But you titled it chronic illness.
Chronic, yeah. So lifelong, can't be cured.
Gotcha.
Kind of illness.
You were on Ouch in 2014. You're telling us about your clean eating diet. Do you... guessing you don't... Oh, you're shivering. What? Great reaction. That's one of my favourite questions I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'm getting the feeling you stopped doing that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that when you're desperate to feel better, you kind of jump on a bandwagon with people telling you that if you eat a certain way or you do a certain thing, that you'll get better because there are loads of bloggers or the media will cover people that have done this. And so you think, I want to get better too. And I got very unwell. I got very mentally unwell. I was very restrictive, very miserable. And I didn't get any healthier, so...
We will return to this in a little bit more in depth, but thank you.
Carly Findlay will be with us all the way from Australia in just a short while to talk about social media. It's the middle of the night there, though, so I guess we couldn't expect her to join us for the whole show.
But let's start with Andrea Bell, who is in Norwich. Hi there, Andrea.
Hi.
ADHD, attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder is your passion and something you and your teenage son Ruben live with. It's also the focus of a video you made which went viral on Facebook. This is you in the car. Let's just hear a clip.
My youngest son has ADD. Beautiful child. Never rude to teachers. Really lovely chap. A bit cheeky, chatty. He gets after-school detentions, reports, isolations, for disorganisation, for forgetfulness, for not sitting still. These are all key symptoms of ADHD. you wouldn't do this to somebody who was in a wheelchair and tell them to get up and walk. You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't say to someone who's epileptic, get up off the floor and stop messing about on the floor while you're having your fit. You just wouldn't do it. So why do we feel that we have to tell somebody with ADHD they have to sit still? It's painful to sit still. It's painful to have concentrate for long periods of time.
What compelled you to make that video? And I'm kind of interested in what was the response, Andrea?
Gosh, well, it was actually my children. I have a, I say 15 because he's 15 on Sunday. If I said 14, he'd tell me off, I think. So my 15-year-old who's got ADHD and my younger son who's 12, he has ADD. And they, over the last sort of 10 years, they've always seen me very positive in the work that I do. But sometimes it is really hard and I get really frustrated. And they suggested that I did something different. They said, why don't you capture your moments when you feel really frustrated? And so it was actually those. So they did say about doing a Facebook Live, and I was sort of laughed it off, you know, no. And it was this particular day I'd been in a meeting with a school and a parent, and I was so frustrated. So I thought, right, I'm going to just record it while I'm driving. It was hands-free, I might add.
Mm.
And I just let it all out and done.
What is your job?
So I started a charity at Norfolk 10 years ago. When I was diagnosed with ADHD, I didn't know anybody else who had ADHD, no adults or anything. So I felt really lonely. So I kind of wanted to identify with somebody else. So I set up at Norfolk. So I work for them now.
So to be honest, I mean, I don't really understand that much about ADHD. Can you just tell me what it is?
And one had an H in and one didn't.
I know. My children argue because my younger son wants an H and he hasn't got it. So there we go.
You always want whatever.
A comedian friend of mine does a little bit about this, is whether it's high definition or not, isn't it? But it's not that, is it?
Yes, yeah. It's broken down into inattentiveness, hyperactivity and impulsiveness. So examples of inattentiveness will be your short attention span, easily distracted, making careless mistakes, forgetting and losing things a lot. For example, if my son has a detention, even if he sets alarms, he can, within a minute, forget. And it's not just those things, it's nice things too. So he would have a rugby game and he'd be in the team and he was so excited and he was going to catch a bus at lunchtime. We packed a lunch for him, he didn't sleep very well. I picked him up at the end of the day, said, "How did it go?" "I forgot." You know, so it's even lovely things that it's not just, you know, detentions. So it's all the forgetfulness, changing activity or task. And quite often in schools, they can be seen as, I think they've used the term dolly daydream or spaced out or just sitting there in a little dream world, not causing any issues. So that's kind of your ADD. So that's without the H.
So what does the H do then?
So the H, the special H. So this is you're unable to sit still, constantly fidgeting. Your concentration is, you know, 10 seconds and then or 10 minutes. And it varies between child and child. Excessive talking, says she, talking away. Unable to wait your turn, so like impatience. And the impulsiveness is just saying something without thinking.
But what's the difference between this and just bad behaviour? You know, somebody who is just disorganised or doesn't want to turn up to detention or doesn't want to do things, doesn't, you know, can't be bothered to sit still.
I'm not sure. I know we do have what we call bad behaviour, but I don't believe any child would act bad consistently. I'm using a little inverted commas sitting here in the studio, just in case you can't see them. So, bad. I don't believe any child would do anything consistently without there being an issue and a reason why. So that's the first thing. And secondly, it's a very small cognitive difference. So it's a difference in your brain. It's very consistent. My youngest one is not rude. He loves to do his work. He loves to succeed. He just can't concentrate for long periods of time. So he has to have that broken down. And if the schools don't understand that, breaking it down, then they miss out on hearing their education. So about 40% of a lesson, they will only hear 40% of it. So they were not taking in the rest of it. So my 12-year-old is quite articulate about it and he can express that. But he says, if you just give me the right tools to be able to stop for a minute or doodle is a fantastic thing then to doodle. He is very academic. He does very well. So this is kind of ADHD is, or ADD is a barrier. So they have the knowledge, but it's the performing that's an issue. But that can be tweaked if the schools can really understand it. So it's not necessarily bad behaviour.
Watching your video, I was obviously moved because there's a lot of emotion in there. The bit that I wanted to know is what would you want schools to do with children like this? Do they need extra support, life hacks? What's your suggestion? What's the fixableness?
The thing that schools can do is early intervention. So in preschool, year one, we're looking for signs. So the common signs are distraction, not being able to concentrate, not being able to focus. And we know that young children generally struggle with that anyway. But if it's flagging up more than the other children, just keeping an eye on it. And then when they get to kind of year one, year two, it will, because it's more structured in year one, it will then increase. So the others will kind of sort of slow down at that point, whereas the inattentiveness will increase. And at this point, there possibly is an issue. So when you need to say to the parent, you know, they're not concentrating, they're not focusing, at that point, there is an issue. The children can't make them concentrate and focus. So they may be hungry, it may be whatever it is, but it could be ADHD. And at this point, it's really important that schools don't say whether they think it is or it isn't. If they've got a problem with focus and concentration, they then refer it to the professionals. And I think that's probably where, it's not all schools, but it's where the pathway is not really clear, that needs to go straight to the professionals and be assessed. Mm. Lots of parents are really frustrated because they're not listened to. And actually, these parents know their children. They are experts. They know exactly what they're talking about. And also teacher training. We've got a level 3 course, which is called ADHD in Education. And we have lots of teachers and teaching assistants on that course. And it's really talking about the history and then how to support somebody within the school environment. So that's a really good way to go too.
When I watched your video, I kind of got into a moral dilemma at the end of it, because I agree with you. How do we change things? How do we allow children in the classroom to be involved and so on? But I was also, there's that other side of me going, how far is too much? And I was really struggling morally, because you want everyone included, but then I was thinking, could there be a point where it gets too disruptive sometimes as well?
I don't know. It's a little bit like saying, does somebody in a wheelchair, is that too sort of destructive, moving them round the chairs or helping them round? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I saw, because you did do that, and I don't equate that. I know what you're trying to say there, but I didn't see that the same. My bit would be, someone in a wheelchair, does that cause disruption to the rest of the class and stop other people learning? And I don't like even saying it, so don't get me wrong, I'm not agreeing with it. I'm trying to work out a solution.
Good
to
job
it.
We're not in the same studio. No, I'm joking.
No, these are the really tricky bits we get.
I know, absolutely. And I totally get you. Basically, the school, if you look at the school over the last sort of 200 years, it's not changed. It's the same rows of desks, et cetera, et cetera. Possibly a little bit different. The distraction comes when they can't concentrate too long, so it's breaking it down into smaller chunks. Mm-hmm. And that's doable.
Yeah.
That's doable. I'm not saying that we're going to eradicate everything, because there are children that have difficult home lives, that don't get to sleep, do come into school hungry. Some of them will have an autism, OCD, Tourette's, other sorts of things. But ADHD is the most treatable psychiatric disorder there is. It's like diabetes of the brain.
So
in the majority of cases, and I use that loosely, it's doable.
And I think maybe that's the bit, because at the moment, people are only just getting their head round the fact that it exists. It reminded me a little bit. I mean, I'm mid-40s, so dyslexia in the 80s, people
Absolutely.
Were just starting to get their head round. Now it's pretty, you know, what's the word? Acknowledged. And I kind of feel you guys are in that place, but 20, 30 years behind and just starting on the journey.
I think while I was at school, I felt as if I was never quite as good as anyone else.
So that's interesting. And when were you diagnosed?
So I was diagnosed just after my son. So when my oldest son, who's 15, was diagnosed, because I knew from 18 months old, even though he was my first, I knew there was something not quite right.
How do you know that about an 18-month-old? Surely they're all just all over the shop.
Yeah, and this is why I didn't know what it was. There was just something when I looked at other... And again, you put it down to they all develop differently, you know, and things like that. But there was no... Oh, it's so difficult to explain. It's very different in their learning. He didn't learn or remember what other children we're remembering, because the short-term memory is, and the working memory is, it doesn't work so effectively. So it's all to do with executive functioning.
Did you get him diagnosed at 18 months old?
No, gosh, no, no. Because as a first-time mum, you just think, oh, it's just something different. But as time went on, it was clear that a lot of people found it very difficult to deal with him, not necessarily naughty behaviour. It was to do with just not being able to listen, or unless you fully got his attention, or telling him something and then he'd go to the other room and forgetting. So these key things that actually are reasonably small and manageable if you knew what they were become bigger issues if they're left. So he was diagnosed at about 6 in the end, and it changed his life. He was medicated and it really worked for him. I mean, my child has always been above average, even without medication, just above average, not loads, but just a little bit above average. And they said he's fine, he's just a little bit above average.
Yeah.
Yet with his medication, he's top sets and everything. So actually, why do we limit it? As long as they're average, they're okay. Actually, he was just really frustrated because he had such a fast mind, and needed things broken down, and he didn't like to ask. I didn't hear that because he didn't take it in. And ADHD, I see as a plus. I recently went to one of Rory Bremner's shows where he played the video at Soho Theatre, mm-hmm. and he was taking medication for the first time. And actually, when he's on stage and he's making all these jokes, they're all coming in his mind, all these jokes at the same time. And so the ADHD brain is amazing. Like Jamie Oliver, add a bit of this, add a bit of that, mm-hmm. and it's all great. So actually it can be used in a really positive way. And medication, a lot of the medication, luckily, is straight in your system, straight out your system. So it's you can take it when you need it. So if you're studying for a day and you need to really focus on what you're doing, you can take it. And it's really sad because actually when my son got diagnosed, I was mortified. I thought it was and this is what I'd been told, so excuse the ignorance then, that it was a council estate disease and severely bad parenting.
Oh, wow.
So when he was diagnosed, I didn't tell anybody, I daren't, because I was so scared of the stigma and what people would judge me. And I made it my business to study it. So I literally read and read and read and read. And it was then that it resonated with me that what I thought was just forgetfulness, couldn't do what others could do, couldn't concentrate, didn't take in information, that I thought, oh my goodness. And I was in tears for weeks just thinking, this is all it is, and it's fixable. It's not curable, but it is treatable.
So how did life change for you after a diagnosis then?
So for me, it's completely turned my world completely around. So when I left school, I didn't think I could go to university because I didn't think... I kind of knew I was intelligent enough. It sounds really odd, but I didn't think that I could... I don't know why I didn't think I could do it. I just couldn't do it. I had low self-esteem, low confidence. I was in and out of kind of jobs. When I got diagnosed, I said, right, now I know what that is. I'm going to do a degree. So I didn't go on medication. I decided that I wanted to prove that I could do it. I could have done it before I was diagnosed. And it just goes to show that all I needed to know was what it was. So I did a criminal psychology degree. Well, I worked in prisons previously in a drug unit, and I enjoyed that type of work. And also I have a real interest in ADHD and crime. The prevalence in the UK is about 3-5%, depending on what research you look at. But then when we go into the prison population, it goes 26-30%. So there's a huge need. And we now have been funded support for a local prison, which is great as well.
So do you have some ADHD life hacks then for studying or getting through life? You know, your tips for how you manage and how other people could manage?
Yes, I would say for your children, just love them as hard as you can and inform them and educate them about ADHD and what it actually is. And for myself, it's, you know, a lot of the coping mechanisms have come very naturally over years of forgetfulness. So I'm writing lists, I've got alarms. When I have to study, I use white noise, but it takes a while to get that to the right level. I doodle all the time, and it's okay to doodle because I can then concentrate better. So that's always a good thing. And a very understanding husband.
Life hack. Yeah. Get a very understanding husband.
And then, Natasha, you have, I've got to pronounce this correctly because Kate will not be happy. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome?
Ehlers.
We've done it like 10 times, Simon.
Can we say ED?
You can say EDS.
EDS.
EDS. An eating disorder.
And as we're going into the whole medicalisation, what is that in a nutshell?
It's a connective tissue disorder, so it affects the structure of your collagen. So one of the most common things is frequent dislocations, chronic pain. It can cause gastric issues. There's a lot of things that it can
You do. Have those tennis player plasters
yeah,
on,
they're
the
pretty
bright
cool colours. Right now. I don't really know what's going on, but every time I move my thumb, a muscle is twisting in my wrist, and it's kind of twisting over the bone. It's very painful at the moment.
Is this a life hack? Do you have other life hacks?
I rest a lot. I'm trying to learn to rest better. I have to plan everything I do almost obsessively in terms of any activity I do to try and preserve energy. I have to try and keep my body as strong as possible. So it's very tempting to try and do like a proper workout, but sometimes it's like 5 squats. I have to be careful about walking. I have completely had to fit my life around my body as opposed to my body into my life.
Okay. Kate does little workouts in the studio. If you both want to
do
some of your yoga weird stuff, that's fine.
I can't do yoga. I dislocated a rib doing yoga.
Yeah, I can't do yoga.
I can't do yoga.
No, yoga's very bad for people with EDS. You need little stretches, though. Little stretches, that's what we do.
Thank you. And your charity, ADHD Norfolk, how do I find out a bit more about that?
It's ADD Norfolk, but
there's no
H in that. So
it's not an HD one.
Yeah, you're getting all
just
hyperactive
standard
about
definition.
It.
Yeah.
So it's ADD Norfolk. So that we have a website, which is gradually being developed. Facebook as well. So Facebook and Twitter, which is at Ad Norfolk. And at Norfolk UK, and there is lots of articles that go up daily, and research about ADHD, journals, news, and things like that. And if you message them, they'll message you back.
Cool.
Thank you so much for your time, Andrea.
You're very welcome. It's great talking to you.
And now, everybody, just have a listen to this. Still, I'm gonna be a fighter. That's Stumble by a group of artists with autism. Hear the rest of that track at the end of the show. Carly Finlay is on Skype from Melbourne. Hi, Carly, how are you?
Hey, good, how are you?
We're good, thank you. Tune in to Radio Carly is your blog, and you do the media roundup for user-led organisation PWD Australia, which I assume is People with Disabilities Australia.
Yeah.
Now, Carly, you have a disability that we haven't actually covered before, so... You know, we don't normally ask for NHS-style descriptions of impairments, but we seem to be asking everyone...
This show.
Yeah, on this show, what their impairment is. So what's your impairment, Carly?
Mine is a rare, severe skin condition called ichthyosis, and it is painful. It means scaly red skin. So, you know, my skin's scaly and red, and it's susceptible to infections and cracking and pain.
How does it affect you sort of day-to-day?
It looks like I'm sunburned. On a day-to-day basis, I need moisturiser, so I need liquid paraffin to make sure my body doesn't get too dry.
Do you have top tips?
Or I wash my clothes with Coca-Cola because
what?
It gets so oily. Yeah.
Coca-Cola, who knew?
Coca-Cola does so many different things, doesn't
it? I know.
Diet or full fat?
The stuff. And it must be really bad for you because if it can take the grease out of the clothes, then it's probably doing really bad stuff to your body.
What's the thing that people ask you the most often?
Oh, gosh. Probably have I been sunburned or what's wrong with you?
Oh, how do you answer?
No, and just mostly walk off.
Walk off. If somebody says what's wrong with you, you just go, no, not engaging.
Yeah.
I was with a friend the other day and this lady stopped me and she said, why is your face so red? And I just walked off. But he said, that is not okay. And he shook his hand at her.
Nice.
I like it. I like an angry friend.
So, social media update. That's why you're here, which is lovely. First story, chimp with Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm. I was reading some of the comments on the, which I shouldn't ever. So I think it was on the Daily Mail, which, I shouldn't ever read.
Yeah, it's always on the Daily Mail.
They were sort of saying, oh, you know, poor thing, but quite happy.
Yeah, and it's a chimp. Does it know it's got Down syndrome? Does it know it's different? I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
The headline made me smile, but by the end of it, I was a little bit down. It was quite a sort of sad piece, wasn't it? They really laid it on quite thick.
I mean, I guess, you know, they're perpetuating that kind of disability as a tragedy.
Yeah.
Disability as the end of the world. Someone suggested it should be put out of its misery. It is blind, and it's been abandoned by its mother and unable to play with other animals. sometimes I think when we've got stories like this, it is a real insult to the people with the condition that, you know, that the media's reporting that it's such a tragedy. There's been a few dogs with the same condition as mine, with dogs with ichthyosis.
Dogs? Well,
I've seen the odd giraffe with dwarfism. Come on, let's do animals with disabilities.
Elephants with EDS.
How would that affect them?
They'd just be wobbling all over the place.
I get it. I get that, you know, it's likely that an animal will have a disability. But the way it's reported on is really cringeworthy. And when I remember when I found this dog with ichthyosis, I think I found it on Instagram, or it might have found me. I mean the owner, not the dog.
Cool.
And they actually weren't so interested in human cases. So every May I do Ichthyosis Month on my blog, and I, you know, run stories from actual people with the condition. And I got the dog's owner to cover it, but she's got a heap of Instagram followers, and she didn't even like promote the project or anything, like the humans that were impacted by the condition. She just sent off her story and...
Well, it's just, they only care about animals with it. Nobody cares about the humans.
Dogs, guys, everyone loves animals more, don't they?
Yeah.
I know, that's the thing, you know, it's cute and it's not an inconvenient baby that will shed skin everywhere, I guess.
Okay, next story. This is something very close to my heart. Disabled and cute, hashtag.
Aww.
Yes, that was great, cute. Wasn't it? So that was started with by journalist Kaya Brown, and... it was started on Twitter. She got people to use the hashtag disabled and cute to show that we are, in fact, disabled and cute, not in a patronising way, but empowering. And
but does it mean cute in the way that I'd say to Simon as a little person? Oh, Simon, you're so cute. You're so cute down there.
No.
So cute. He loves it. He's just looking at me with big, loving eyes right now as I say it.
No, well, I think... I did see a few tweets that were a bit, that felt patronised, I think. But it doesn't mean that. It means that we're disabled and stylish, or disabled and sexy, or whatever.
I enjoyed doing the research on this.
You did, because you started friending some disabled and cute people. I'm not sure it was meant as a dating hashtag, but hello.
Just the one. Yeah. And now I've gone really red. I can't think of such a tough time. You said about style, but are we buying into you've got to look good as well, and that starts making it problematic? Is that putting us under pressure?
I don't know. I put it on Twitter, and I did choose a photo that I probably wouldn't normally share of myself. I had very little clothes on. I mean, I wasn't naked, but, you know.
Hello. See, I told you, it's like a dating thing.
Loving this whole piece.
So it wasn't like a dating service for me. But I did have 147 likes on my tweet, which was quite good. And on that day when I did it, I was doing the We Are Australia curated account as well. So that has a lot of followers, like 10,000 or something. So I was retweeting them from there as well, to get wider mainstream coverage.
Carly, you have a podcast called Refreshments Provided. Let's listen to a clip.
Oh, gosh.
I do need to get to the barbers. I do go weekly. Which is, yes. Why? Are you trying to shame me?
No, I'm just wondering the need to go weekly to the barber.
Because this doesn't take care of itself.
Can't you do it?
Why would you do something yourself when you can get someone else to do it?
Like those ladies that have a blow wave.
High maintenance.
Like that don't wash their hair and then just go and have a blow wave so someone else can do it.
Yes.
What was that all about, Carly?
So my friend Jason, he's my co-host, he has a beard and he takes great pride in it.
So, and what's your podcast about?
It's mostly about food. We each bring a plate to the recording sessions of food. I don't usually cook it, although I cook a lot, but I don't usually cook the refreshment. I buy it mostly. Jason is an amazing cook. He cooked our wedding cake. So every time I go there, it's like this feast of the senses. And we talk about food. We talk about what we've been doing this week. We talk about podcasts that we really like. So I'll mention this on there when I next record.
Thank you so much.
We talk about movies and books. So it's just really about pop culture. But we try not to do activism stuff. I mean, we're both from minority groups, I guess. But sometimes we do, you know, venture into that.
Is his minority a hipster with that beard?
No, no, but he was the one that shook his hand at the lady that asked me about my face. And then he said, like he was joking, that he wanted this to go all viral inspiration porn. Like he's a privileged white male defending the woman.
What actually is his minority thing?
Privileged white male.
Oh, it's National Women's Week.
Yep. What's his minority?
He's gay.
Ah, there you go.
Yep.
Gay. A bit disappointed. We wanted a bit more, didn't we?
We all wanted more than gay.
Add a little bit more to that next time, please, Carly.
Oh, he's ginger as well.
Ah, ginger.
That's
perfect.
What we're after.
Right, good.
Yep.
We
brilliant.
We play a bit of the Prussian Olympics to see who's got the most privilege, and he agrees that I am the least privileged because I am a woman that's red and disabled.
Definitely.
And actually a woman of colour, so...
But you're a trooper because you stayed up late tonight to speak to us.
You did, and we very much appreciate it. Now, please get yourself off to bed.
Okay, thanks.
Sweet dreams.
Thanks, Carly.
Bye, Carly. Natasha Lipman, it is finally your turn. You've been waiting very patiently. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. How are you?
Good. Now, you have about, I don't know, what, 72 bajillion followers on Instagram?
23 bajillion.
23 bajillion. Okay, so yeah. Not quite as many, but yeah, a lot still.
Yes.
Did you get involved with the hashtag disabled and cute?
I did on Twitter, and it kind of goes along with a lot of the stuff that I post on Instagram about what does it mean to be disabled and what does being disabled look like. So because unless you count things on my arms or when I've had a particularly bad injury, you wouldn't look at me and know that there's something wrong with me. And it took me a really long time to accept the word disabled because of the whole societal stigma around it and what that means. And I didn't feel as a healthy looking person that I was disabled or that people would buy me as disabled. So it was more of a, yes, I can look like I don't have a disability and still be disabled.
Now, last time we met,
the shudder's going to come back.
Yeah, you were on a very specific diet.
Yeah, it was a joy-free diet. I think you could say it was vegan and gluten-free and dairy-free, which is in with vegan, and rotation and low histamine and what I thought was sugar-free, but I was eating a lot of dates, which are pretty high in sugar.
Yeah.
I realised, like, I got to the point where I was scared to eat supermarket vegetables because I thought it was poisoning me.
Poisoning you?
Yes.
Wow, that's quite a big word.
Yes.
You must have been very deep. This became an obsession.
It became like a very big obsession. And I think the thing was that it started when I developed a few new conditions.
Yeah.
My gastric system basically shut down. I had very severe histamine reactions. With histamine, it's used in the process of digestion. So I was even getting reactions to eating things. So
what's histamine? Like, what's in histamine?
Histamine.
What is histamine in?
Histamine is, I don't know, it's like what's used in allergic reactions, but like our body uses it, for example, when we're digesting, and it's used in a lot of bodily processes. And I have an intolerance to histamine. So it's actually quite common for people with EDS. It's found in the mast cells. So your body can't kind of clear the histamine that it uses. So you get kind of intolerance or allergy kind of symptoms. When I first started, I couldn't really eat anything, and I was on a lot of medications that I was having very severe reactions to, so I'm not a good one for medication. So at the same time that I started coming off the medication, I started doing this diet that I'd read about online, and lots of bloggers were talking about how they'd healed all of their chronic illnesses or they'd healed very serious health conditions, and these were people that could also have been covered by the media, so it kind of gave it an edge of legitimacy.
Mm.
And they would have hundreds of thousands of followers, they would write books, there would be documentaries on Netflix about talking about how going vegan and doing all of this could cure a number of ailments. So I thought, what's the harm? I'm already very sick anyway. At that time, I couldn't get out of bed. So I kind of adopted it overnight, and I did start getting better for a while, but at the same time I was coming off of the medication that made me unwell. But because that was a passive thing and I was doing something that I felt was active, I wasn't correlating the two.
And placebo effect, you wanted to believe this
was
working.
You wanted to believe that it was working. And I did this for a year and a half, 2 years. And at the beginning, you think it's great, you're eating more fruits and vegetables. I had a penchant for peanut butter grilled cheese sandwiches, so ooh, I could very happily have lived off of those. So you know, it was something like,
that's not joyless, that's quite good.
No, before this.
Oh, sorry.
Before this, so kind of going, no, that's like ultimate joy for me. Bread and cheese is my
happy place. It was one of those things where I thought, what's the harm in trying this diet? I'm just eating really healthily. But as I kind of got more involved in the wellness community on Instagram and was reading all of these things, the messages that were out there was, and that people were actively telling me, was that if you eat this way, you will get better. If you eat the other things, you're as good as poisoning your body. Why would you eat in a way that is making you more unwell? Why would you not do everything you can to be better? And I kind of was taking on that.
And that was what you were getting from Twitter and Instagram.
From Instagram and from these bloggers. And, you know, if someone says that they've cured their health conditions by going vegan and eating a plant-based diet, you're thinking, oh, wow, that seems like, why haven't the doctors told me about this? Why couldn't I do that too? This is one of the interesting things about chronic illnesses, is like the fluctuating nature. And there's not as much that can be done about how they impact your day-to-day life. I felt like if I work my arse off, can I say
you're
arse?
Taking control.
If I work as hard, yeah, I'm taking control. And it's something, instead of being passive and waiting for the doctors to make me better, I wanted to do. And that's very much my personality anyway.
There must be something in it about accepting a condition that can't be cured as well.
Exactly.
And you have to go through that process of...
And
you'll try everything you can because you think there must be a way to stop this, and then there isn't, and you do have to accept it. And I guess what
it's
you're
a
doing
way of, and my doctor said to me, stop throwing money at your health problems, it's not going to fix it. I would go and see anyone, I would try anything, I would buy whatever, because I was like, this can't be it, this can't be my life. And I think when you kind of, the way your health impacts you is very counter to your personality. I was like, okay, I'm not okay with this. And it was progressively getting worse. And I was like, I need to actively do something about it.
So when you were in the middle of your diet, what was an average day like for you?
I spent all my time thinking about food and cooking and whether I could go out and eat somewhere. And my mum always complained, I was living at home at the time, that the flat smelled like green juice.
So I have an inappropriate question.
Yes.
If you're eating that much vegetables...
I pooed a lot. Mm-hmm. Was that what you were going to ask?
Yeah, that was part of it.
You're welcome, everyone. I spent a lot of time on the loo.
Yeah.
And I was living off almost liquids. I genuinely feel that that's a good thing for me anyway. I feel better when I have kind of a liquid meal. But, you know, I was having a green juice with like 10 veggies. I was having a smoothie. I was having, you know, I was like having zoodles, which is like spiralized courgette with like an avocado dressing, and thinking that was a meal. I was living off of dates and almond butter.
Did you just not do anything else?
I didn't. I worked from home when I could, but especially at the beginning, I was so unwell, I couldn't do anything anyway. So I put, and when you believe that the food is going to make you better, why wouldn't you put all of your time and money into food? Everything that I did wasn't good enough for Instagram. Everything I did. Why aren't you 100% raw vegan? That's when my stomach really started hurting. I did it for 3 days and I was like, I need some pancakes. And then, you know, why are you still eating grains? Grains are inflammatory. Grains are part of the reason.
Yeah, come on, loser. I'm always tweeting that. Yeah. Why are you still on grains?
So what you're saying is not that you didn't think it was good enough for you to post on Instagram, but that people on Instagram would find fault with whatever you were doing.
I've had people telling me, and this is kind of part of a wider issue that I have with social media, especially kind of in the wellness scene, is that when you're honest about having health conditions, everyone thinks that they've cured their illness. So you still see these dangerous articles of people saying they juice their way out of cancer. It's so dangerous that people will say the reason that you're still sick is you're not eating the right way, or the reason that you're still sick is, and I literally have had people say this to me, and I've had a few emails even still, the reason that you're not sick is because you can't accept that you can get better. The reason that you're sick is because your attitude is too negative.
Presumably there are health benefits. Some people can change their diet and really benefit.
And I think the thing is, I still eat a very healthy diet. Like if I'm eating rubbish food, I feel rubbish. It's kind of common sense, right? But what I'm not doing is saying
extremities.
Well, what was your turning point? When did you decide, hold on, this isn't working for me, this isn't what I thought it was, I need to change?
I was so miserable because my entire life was about restriction and I couldn't think about anything except food. And I was having like flare up after flare up. I'd had to stop working again. I took 8 months off. I was in bed. It was the evidence it wasn't working. And I started reading more about it. And a few of my friends who I met on Instagram, we started going through the same thing at the same time. And I think that I was just like, I'm not better and I'm miserable. So while, you know, me eating much more lax now may mean I feel like 5-10% worse on a day-to-day level, I'm happy because I love
eating. The first time I ate pizza again, I cried. I swear to God, I sat there and I cried. I mean, it's so good. But, you know, it's really difficult and thing to do because I don't like the word victim blaming, but there's a kind of pseudo-religious feeling of self-responsibility that is perpetuated in the media and on social media, that if you're not doing whatever is deemed to be the most healthy thing at the time, no matter if it's based on absolute nonsense, if enough people are behind it and you've got a few pretty people floating around on a beach doing yoga saying that they've cured their illnesses, we're not taking into account illnesses change. Like, I have POTS as well, and you know,
POTS is
postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. It's
again, which is
autonomic dysfunction. So the things that your body is supposed to do to regulate itself, mine doesn't do very well. So I get, every time I sat up or ate, I was like passing out. It was really annoying. But some people get that virally, and no matter what, it can go away in a few years. Mine is more structural because of my connective tissue. So, you know,
or it can just get better with age.
It can get better with age. And there's fluctuations, and we don't take that into account, and we're assuming that it's the diet change that made the difference.
You're becoming an advocate now, perhaps for younger people, to say, don't believe everything, try it out for yourself.
I think it's really great that there's generally a pushback against clean eating, but I don't think that there's much of a focus about people who go into it not for weight loss reasons or go into it for kind of social reasons, who go in because they feel that they might actually be able to make a difference to their health. And I feel kind of bad that I was sharing that point in my life, because I know that people were trying what I was, even though I was very clear in saying, I am trying this myself. When you have a platform, people are going to copy you no matter what. And I feel kind of guilty and frustrated. And, you know, I still feel like I've been having a flare up the last few weeks, and I'm thinking, oh, is it because I had too much bread the other day? Or is it
on Instagram? I've noticed that you have 100 bajillion followers, but you only follow about 200 odd people. Did you do a big social media cull? Like, how did you get over this Instagram
thing? I kind of didn't go on social media for a long time, and I had my social life at that time became entirely with people who were into wellness. So we would go to the latest raw vegan restaurant, and I would get sent all of this food, and you know, so kind of stopping spending time with people who literally their job was to look good for Instagram, that's not that good for you. So I stopped spending time with them. I stopped really looking on social media for a while. I deleted a bunch of people. I now try and kind of surround myself with people online that I find, I don't like the word inspiring, but that I find inspirational or educational, and people that put out positive messages.
Like, well, what kind of people?
My friend Pixie actually kind of went through the same thing. I follow a lot of dietitians. I also, like, don't just follow food people. I follow artists. I follow activists. I've been, like, an international youth activist in my past. So that's kind of where I came from, and it's nice just reading more interesting people. And there's a blogger called The Angry Chef, and he is fantastic, and he very swearily, rantily talks about kind of the delusions of the wellness industry. And I'm actually going to talk at the British Dietetic Association later this year, because one of the problems is dietitians don't understand why people fall for this. They're saying, you know, we're saying have a balanced diet and drink enough water, and these are the things that you should do, and seek a professional. And they don't understand why people will do what people on Instagram tell them to. And I think from my perspective, it came out of a place of desperation. I'm generally a very critical thinker, but when it comes to feeling like you can be better and people have told you that this made them better, you will try anything to get better. And it doesn't matter if a dietitian is saying, oh, well, there's no proof of this.
But you didn't need that, because you're all reaffirming each other.
Exactly.
Everyone keeps telling you that.
Exactly.
Are there still a couple of good wellness people, bloggers that you do follow? Or you?
I have a few friends that kind of, usually they're fighting back against it, and we're all former clean eaters, and there's kind of a little tribe of it. There's a couple of dietitians who do some really great work trying to make nutrition messages accessible to the Instagram generation.
And now, your relationship with food.
I eat a lot. I sometimes...
What kind of thing? Like, last night, I mean, I literally had pizza for lunch, and then I went home, and then I had lasagna, and then I had chocolates. You know, like, that is a lot to me. Is that a lot to you? Would you say that's...
I would say that's a lot. I think the thing for
me... But is that a lot for you? Because I feel like you're still eating, like, you know, are you still eating like vegetables and stuff?
I do, but I think I mean, those awful vegetables.
I mean, obviously that's a good thing. We should all eat our vegetables.
Oh, balance, yeah, balance. Yeah, but,
no, pizza and chocolate still, right?
No, like, of course, the thing is for me, and I think this is one of the interesting things about the clean eating movement, is they're like, don't eat anything you can't pronounce, don't eat additives, don't eat anything like that.
I can pronounce chocolate.
Yes, but what I'm talking about is the additives that are in food. Now, the thing that's, like, I genuinely get reactions to things like citric acid. And so certain preservatives, we made an amazing banana bread the other day, and it had baking powder in it. I spent the entire day curled up in agony because of that. So, you know, I think you have to be sensible if you have your own food intolerances. And so for me, I try and eat as healthily as possible in the day. My boyfriend eats whatever the hell he wants. So when I'm with him, we usually eat whatever. He makes a lot of bread, a lot of pizza, and I have no control over baked goods when I'm around them. So, I have no control of myself around them. Yeah. I will eat like an entire loaf of bread.
We heard that from. Is this an EDS thing? Do you think?
I think the lack of willpower.
Come on, let's put this on the.
Can we just blame that on the EDS? Yeah, it's not our fault. Say, yeah.
When it's in front of you, it's something to do with EDS. But collagen makes you want to eat it. Yeah, and we just have to
actually.
Do that.
So one of the genuine things though is that when my fatigue levels are very high, I am starving, I'm insatiably hungry, and I can't stop eating because your body wants energy, and we would normally go to things like sugar and, you know, chocolate. So, you know, I have chocolate every day, but it's a small amount and I'm strategic when I eat it.
I mean, are you still very careful then?
I have to be. Mm. I don't want to make myself feel more unwell. I still mostly cook from scratch. I get recipe boxes. I like the recipe boxes.
I do. I was looking at Kate. Thinking,
she's not a cooking
star. I can see it in her head going, oh, she's embarrassing me, this guest. she's doing it properly.
But I does it well.
It's not you, Natasha.
It's entirely Kate's fault. It's fine. I think that it's something that, you know, I eat in a way that makes me feel good, and I would never kind of advocate anything for anyone. I eat bread even though it makes me very itchy. I'll have it a little bit.
I think give her another 2 years and she'll be eating pizza for lunch, lasagna for tea and chocolate, and she'll come back and tell us that I was right all along.
The other thing I will say though is I'm 4'9" and I'm not that mobile. So, you know, it's very easy to sit in bed and eat all day. And because I'm at home, I also have to be careful of my like caloric intake. It's something that, you know, I can't go out and exercise or go for a long walk. So I do try and be careful.
Do you count calories then?
No, I don't.
Just for clarification, you said you're 4'9".
Yeah.
To join people with dwarfism, 4'10" is a cutoff. I might appropriate you into dwarfism rather than EDS.
You can't have her as a dwarf, no. What?
No, that makes
not
me
a
even
dwarf.
More... makes me even more...
What is it? A little person.
A little person.
No, it's not that. I just said dwarfism. Anyway, keep going.
So. That makes me even more... like, that's an extra thing to add to my list in the Oppression Olympics, right?
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, I haven't heard that. I like the Oppression Olympics. That's really good.
Yeah.
So welcome to the Short People Collective.
Thank you. I'm very excited.
It's great to have you.
I'll advocate you on Instagram. What's the hashtag?
Yes. Now, the only problem is I'm a bit old, so I don't do it. I've got about 3 people
on
Instagram.
We'll have to take a selfie again.
Okay, we can do that. That's great. It's all working out. The whole
Stop
thing.
Stop flirting with Natasha.
Flirting with me.
You guys over there on that side of the table.
Hashtag table and cute. That's it for the March 2017 Outs Talk Show. Thanks to our guests, Andrea Bell, Carly Finlay and Natasha Lipman. The producer was Emma Tracy.
Music this month is from an album called Bridges by a group of UK artists with autism. It was launched in February at London's Hard Rock Cafe, and here's the first single from Bridges, Stumble. Goodbye.
I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do. It's like I'm wide awake, feel like I'm just sleeping through. No, no one can tell me what to do. How to let go, I only wish I knew. Still I'm gonna be a fighter. Stumble.
I'm gonna